The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke.
Glory to you, O Lord.
While some people were speaking about how the temple was adorned with costly stones and votive offerings, Jesus said, "All that you see here, the days will come when there will not be left a stone upon another stone that will not be thrown down." Then they asked him, "Teacher, when will this happen? And what sign will there be when all these things are about to happen?" He answered, "See that you are not deceived. For many will come in my name, saying, 'I am he,' and the time has come. Do not follow them. When you hear of wars and insurrections, do not be terrified, for such things must happen first, but it will not immediately be the end." Then he said to them, "Nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be powerful earthquakes, famines, and plagues from place to place, and awesome sights and mighty signs will come from the sky. Before all this happens, however, they will seize and persecute you. They will hand you over to the synagogues and to prisons, and they will have you led before kings and governors because of my name. It will lead you to giving testimony. Remember, you are not to prepare your defense beforehand, for I myself shall give you a wisdom in speaking that all your adversaries will be powerless to resist or refute. You will even be handed over by parents, brothers, relatives, and friends, and they will put some of you to death. You will be hated by all because of my name, but not a hair on your head will be destroyed. By your perseverance, you will secure your lives." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
I didn't want anybody falling asleep during my homily, so I made sure they turned the AC on today. No, we're working on the boiler, so it's under repair right now, but we should have it up and running hopefully in the next couple weeks. So hopefully this is just a temporary fix, but feel free to take off your jackets anytime, you know. About 2 years ago, shortly after I was ordained a priest, I was invited by some distant relatives of mine to their family reunion. It's always a big deal. Hundreds of people come to this thing, the Lamping family reunion. And we're distantly related, but I remember as a kid, we would go there, and I didn't know anybody because, again, it was distant relations. But they invited me out to celebrate Mass in this old pole barn that they had on top of this hill where the family farm used to be and still is. And so I went out there, you know, very excited about being a new priest, you know, and went up there and celebrated Mass, and it was a blazing hot day in June. I had the server, like, dabbing my forehead like he was a nurse and I was performing surgery during the Mass. I mean, it was terribly hot. But it was a lot of fun, too, because we had some of my elder relatives that I don't get to see very often, one of which is Great Uncle Louie. Now, Great Uncle Louie, my grandpa's brother, he's almost completely blind. He can't see very much, and he can't hear much of anything either. So when you conversate with him, you know, you have to really yell out everything you say just so that he can maybe hear what you're saying. But that day, he was in rare form. I don't know if he was so excited about the fried chicken we were getting later or what it was, but he was telling all these stories of his time when he was in World War II. And his son was telling us he never, ever opens up about this. Like, he barely ever tells stories, and yet here he was, one story after another was coming out. And he was telling us how he was in the 82nd Airborne Division. You know, that's the famous division that was involved in the paratrooping into France with the invasion of Normandy in World War II. They were involved in the Battle of the Bulge. They were involved in Operation Market Garden, where they paratrooped into Holland for the invasion from the north. And one story after another he was telling us about, you know, the time that he was shot and he had the Purple Hearts and all this other stuff. Well, one story that he told, he was coming into Holland and they'd already paratrooped in, and they really didn't know where the enemy was. So he and a few of his buddies and his platoon were sent ahead to scout and get information for the rest of the battalion. So he's going out, you know, and they're trying to figure out where these Nazi soldiers are at, you know, that the rest of the company can be prepared for them. And they see this huge hill that they can go up, you know, to get a survey of the land around them. And they get up there, and there's this barn up there. He decides he's going to go up into the loft, you know, and take a look around so that he can get it as high as he can, get it the best vantage point that he could. And his buddy stayed in the barn below. Well, no sooner had he gotten up into the hayloft of this barn and was looking out, when these mortar shells start flying in and hitting the surrounding area right where they're at, and they realize they've been spotted. You know, the enemy knows where they're at. And so they're trying to get out of this barn as fast as they can because they know all it takes is one shell in that building and they're done for. And so they're, you know, he jumps out of the loft, you know, and they're sprinting out of this barn. And as any good Catholic would in that situation, he decides to make a deal with God for his life. And so he looks up to heaven as he's sprinting out the door, you know, trying to get down this hill and away from the danger. And he says, God, if you get me out of this, if you get me out of this alive and safe, you know, and I'm unharmed, I will pray every day for as long as it takes that there will be a priest in our family. At this point, he looks over at me and he says, for 70 years, I've been praying for you. He says, you're welcome. And he also said, you know, sometimes it takes, if something is worth praying for, sometimes it takes a long time to get what you want. And it's true. Now, on Friday, we celebrated Veterans Day. You know, we celebrated this day where we honor those individuals who were willing to put their life on the line. They were willing to give everything that they had in service of their country, of their loved ones, of what they believed in. And that's good. We should celebrate our veterans. We should honor them. And if we have any veterans here today, we should thank them. And I want to thank you for all the service that you have provided us. But this last week in the Catholic Church, we were also celebrating Vocations Week. This last week, we were honoring those who gave their life to the church, making the ultimate sacrifice of their life as priests and religious and even as married folk. And so as we honor those vocations, it seems prudent to me, it seems a good idea to kind of fill you in on where we're at in our vocation, specifically to the priesthood. Many of us have heard the line that we are in the midst of a vocation crisis, that we are in the midst of a time when we are in need of more men to step up and become priests. And it's true. It's very, very true. We're not in the best position right now. This became very clear to me a few weeks back. I was back at St. Meinrad in southern Indiana, where we train our young men to be priests, and they do an excellent job down there. And I was there for a workshop on how to be a pastor. It was all about, you know, administration, you know, and how to be a good priest to a new parish and stuff that I very much needed, and I was very appreciative of. And while there was about 30 of us from the archdiocese that had gone down there, 30 priests that had went down. And we decided on Monday night we were going to get together with our seminarians who were studying for the archdiocese, and we were going to celebrate evening prayer together. And I thought that was a great idea. So about 12 of us priests got together, and we went down to the chapel, you know, where the seminarians gather for evening prayer. There were only 4 seminarians. Now, granted, 2 of them are on pastoral leave, so they're taking a year off. But all told, at St. Meinrad, our major seminary, we only have 6 guys studying for the Archdiocese of Indianapolis. At our college, we only have 8. So all told, we have 14. That's it. 14 guys for the next 8 years. So if you do the math, right, I have here a list of the number of priests that we have in the Archdiocese and the dates that they're going to be retiring. I'm on the very last page of this list. Right now, we have 46 retired priests. 46 priests are no longer working in parishes on a regular basis. They substitute, they help out on the side, but they're not pastors anymore. They don't have a parish full time. And it's only going to get worse. Over the next 4 years, we have on docket 17 priests who will be entering into retirement. That means that there are 17 parishes right now who have a priest that in 4 years that priest will have retired and will no longer be able to serve that parish. In those same 4 years, at best, if all of our seminarians pull through to us, which is a big if, there's the big attrition rates when it comes to seminarians, at best we'll have 6 ordained. 17 retired, 6 will be ordained. Take that the next step. Let's look at the next 10 years. 10 years out, We have 38 priests who will be retiring. Now just think about that. That means 38 parishes. Some of these priests having multiple parishes that will no longer be in active ministry. And in that same amount of time, if we keep at the same rate we're at right now, only 15 will be ordained. And so we're not keeping up. We're not doing a very good job with that. And it seems to be a very grim outlook on the future. Now, we're very blessed here in Terre Haute. You know, we have the Franciscan priests here. We've been doing a decent job of keeping priests here in Terre Haute. But it may not always be that way. I remember when I was back home a few years back, they were doing the Connected in the Spirit program for the Batesville Deanery. They were looking at all the parishes and wondering which ones can we keep open and which ones can't we. And my home parishes were under the microscope. You know, they were the ones that were looking at saying, we're not sure if we can keep these open. And so they were asking all these questions, you know, about what they could do. And the parishioners came to me and they're like, Danny, you know, back then I wasn't a priest, so I was just Danny. And they were like, Danny, what can we do? You know, can we give more money? Will that keep us open? If we give more money, will they keep us open? Can we have more programs? Can we do more at the parish? Can we be more active? And that will keep our parish open. What can we do? We'll do whatever it takes. You know, our great-grandfathers built this church and we want to see it continue on. And I said, there's really not much we can do because it has nothing to do with finances. We're given plenty of money. It has nothing to do with activities or programs. We're doing very good at our parishes on keeping things and ministries going. We just don't have the priests. We just do not have the priests anymore. And so St. Anne's in Hamburg had to close down completely. St. John's, my home parish, and St. Morris had to merge together as one parish. The both of them closed individually. But thankfully, there's still hope. There's a good deal of hope, actually. Because thankfully, believe it or not, we still have young men in the Catholic Church. They're still out there. Many of them are in this room, and I'm looking to you guys. All right? And we have these young men. And we've been told time and time again that when we have these young Catholic men, you know, we shouldn't pressure them into a vocation to priesthood. We shouldn't pressure them into thinking about priesthood because that will just scare them off. I say let's pressure them. Let's go for it. You know, what are we holding back from? You know, let's put a little bit of pressure on. I remember, you know, when I was a junior in high school and I was on the fence, you know, I wasn't sure what I was going to be doing. And I went on the March for Life. I went to Washington, D.C. to you know, protest the pro-choice movement and try to be for pro-life. And we got out there and we stayed with the Little Sisters of the Poor when we were out there. And I guess as a junior in high school, you know, being a young and energetic young man, they decided I'd be the good man to take all the bags from the bus and take them into the Little Sisters of the Poor, and I had to take them up to the fifth floor where we were going to be staying. So here I am taking all these bags in, you know, and I put them on the elevator and take them up to the fifth floor. Well, one of the trips, I'm in the elevator surrounded by all these bags, and there was a 3-foot-tall old nun who was riding the elevator with me. And, you know, we didn't say one word to each other the whole way up. We were just kind of listening to the elevator music for five floors going up. And we get to the top floor, and she stepped off first, and she turned around, and she said to me, out of the blue, have you ever thought about being a priest? Now, I guarantee she said that to every young man who was on that trip. I guarantee it. I wasn't alone. It's not like I had some aura about me, and she was just like, this guy's got it. You know, this guy's going to be a priest someday. I bet she asked it of everybody. But you know what? One of us answered. She may have asked it of everybody, but one of us did respond. And so let us ask our young men, have you thought about priesthood? Are you still thinking about priesthood? What can we do to support you in this? Let's make an effort in that way. We have in our pews, and we've received in the mail, envelopes for the United Catholic Appeal. It's this fundraiser that we do for the Archdiocese of Indianapolis, and a lot of people are opposed to it. They think that it's money that we're just throwing to downtown Indianapolis that we never see again. You know, it's kind of the great drain of our funds in the Archdiocese. But you know, it's from those funds that we educate our seminarians. It's from those funds that I was able to go through 8 years of seminary and be trained in how to perform the sacraments, how to perform a good homily, how to do a good job as a priest, at least I hope. And so we need to put some money towards it as well. It's not just enough to do that. And of course, at the end of the day, beyond all of that, sometimes if anything's worth praying for, it's worth praying a long time for. And so let us keep praying for vocations. They're out there. God hasn't stopped calling young men to be priests. It's just a lot harder to hear that call nowadays. So let us keep praying, let us keep pressuring, and let's put our money where our mouth is, and I guarantee we'll be okay. Amen.